You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Ceci Fernandez. Ceci is a wonderful actor and writer. We met through mutual friends years ago, and she is also from Miami, like my husband, so they know a lot of the same people from speech and debate during high school. She is a hilarious, thoughtful woman. I'm so glad to have her in my life. And it was a pleasure to catch up with her this week and talk about her journey and building a creative life. I wanted to let you guys know that starting with this episode, I'm partnering with Playbill.com. They'll be featuring the Compass episodes on their jobs page every week as part of an effort to expand resources to actors. And hopefully we'll be collaborating in the future on some live events and multimedia content. So it's all good things. I hope you enjoy the 42nd episode of The Compass. What is the dark side for you as an artist, and how do you try to keep from going there?
I guess the dark side is probably the place where I, like, just beat myself up.
Yeah.
The dark side is where I, like, lay in bed and eat a bag of Cheetos. how do I not go there? I guess, here's the thing. So I do still go there.
Like, that's fine. Or try, or tried it. Or yeah. Once you've been there for a while, how you get yourself to turn it around, you know?
I think mostly for me it's projects. Like things that have nothing to do with my acting work. I really like to draw and paint, which I don't do well. I just do them. it's just like anything to get my mind away from it. But I guess, what else do I do? I think it's just like a lot of talking to people, listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Me too.
And any kind of social activism, I think service, I've found, has been the thing that's been the most useful. Like being of service to other people, friends who are sick, whatever. Mm-hmm. I've gotten myself involved with other social justice groups that are generally about like anti-violence against women, violence against people of color, things like that. So that's been really nice and has occupied my time, though it hasn't occupied my time as much as I thought it would. Like in terms of the time that I wanted to give to service, I've just gotten very busy recently, and you know, you make all of these like well-intentioned plans, and then it's another thing to go into the dark side about. I don't have enough time. Oh. Yeah. What else is the dark side, dude? Calling my parents is such a helpful thing for the dark side. Calling my sisters is such a helpful thing for the dark side. My sisters are amazing. And mostly the best part about calling my sisters, specifically calling my sister Letty, is I'll call her and I'll be like, oh, this thing is really sad. I'm like, what if I'm a failure? Like, what if everything is the worst? And this was all my choices. And she'll be like, Ceci, no, listen, you're fine. Sophia, get off of the couch! And that is the way that I feel the most comfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, it's, I know that sounds ridiculous and it's not so horrible, but, or she's not horrible. It's not so like intense, but it's just like such a wonderful reminder that there are real problems out there.
Yes.
Like I don't have a bunch of kids.
Right.
Like I don't, not that kids are a problem, but like I have all of this spare time to think and worry about myself and all of my problems.
Yeah.
Because I have nothing else to worry about. Because I have nothing else to, like, really not occupy my time. Because I could occupy my time playing Pokemon Go. And that's, like, nonsense. But, like, I don't have, like, a little life to keep alive.
Right.
I don't.
That's demanding your time.
And these things are, like, very important.
Yeah.
Like, my sister makes life and death decisions every day. Both of them do. Both of them have two daughters, which, wow. And being a woman and the thought of having to raise another woman is like, That's a lot of responsibility.
It is. It is. I just Skyped with my sister-in-law and my two nieces last night, and it was the same thing. Like, they were both, it was the end of the day. They were both tired. They were just climbing all over her, all over each other, all over the computer. And yeah, it's so much responsibility.
Yeah. It was also an amazing thing. This is totally tangential. When my first niece was born, I have always been of the mind that, like, I wasn't ever going to have kids. Mm-hmm. That wasn't anything. That wasn't, like, I didn't have, like, a maternal draw in that way. And when Sophie was born, I remember being like, oh, I would fight a bear for that thing.
Yeah.
That's not even my baby.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's like how I feel, too.
Yeah. To, like, recognize, I don't know, your DNA in something. I don't know what that is. I'm sure that there's all kinds of
that child is the child of your sibling. Like, yeah. I only have one sibling, my brother, and the fact, like, seeing him be a dad and the fact that this is his child, like, I get so emotional about it.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was totally tangential.
No,
I'm trying to think of other things that I do.
No, but that's a big thing. It's so easy as actors, like with all the business stuff, to have the focus just be on us and other people's, how they're seeing us or their opinion of us. And anyway, like you're saying, through service or through family, of seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And it's also, I've been meditating a lot more recently. It was something that I used to do before grad school, and then grad school happened, and I was like, I don't have time for anything.
Yeah.
And then I restarted my practice recently, and I find that, like, being quiet, any level of quiet that you can find, we live in New York City, so that's, like, very rare. But any level of quiet that you can find, I think that, like, answers just drop into your brain. The dark side can always be there. It will always be there. But, like, these bigger answers just kind of, like, boop. They just, like, fall in. And I've also found that, like, little things reassure me. Like, this will not be forever. Like, my whole life won't be forever. Like, this is totally temporary. Who knows what happens after? No idea. But, like, but not up to me. I am not in control of anything.
Yeah. I mean, that does put things in perspective. Because that's one of the things that I find frustrating about, like, the business of acting, is how little control the actors have.
And I think that, like, there is a certain amount of, like, you have to give over to the universe. But, like, at the same time, there is stuff that is totally unfair and needs to be fought. Like, so, I guess for me, The dark side, was, like, part of understanding my own darkness was understanding, like, what parts of it were just, like, made up and in my brain, and what parts of it were, like, actually things that are injustices that are happening in the world. Because I get so overwhelmed with all kinds of feelings. but I get overwhelmed with, like, the politics and all of the, Jesus, all the violence that's going on.
Oh, my God.
You know, and then the things that are, like, all of the gray stuff in the middle, that there's just an overwhelming amount of things that feel unfair, that feel that need to, like, they need to be fought. Like, I constantly say that I wish that I could live 8 parallel lives, because one of me would be, like, a social justice lawyer, one of them would be a politician, one, like, because I have so many dreams of wanting to help. I'm one person, and I'm also just, like, definitely not smart enough. Like, I couldn't be a lawyer if I wanted to be. I would be so distracted. I would be constantly doodling in my textbook. Sorry, this is not about darkness. I don't know what this
No,
is
it
about.
Is. It is.
But I guess, yeah, figuring out which stuff I could handle, like, which stuff was in my hands and which stuff wasn't.
Right.
Which is, like, a crazy long process of learning. I also am, I don't know if this is how I was raised, or, because my cousin and I were talking about this yesterday. We need everything to be done now. We need all things to be done now. We have zero patience.
Right.
And especially when it comes to, like, us, like, our internal lives. Like, my heart is broken. I'm going to need to be active and functional by tomorrow. I'm going to give myself 24 hours to cry, and then that's going to be it. But that's never how anything right. works. And so, like, that was also a very large learning curve for me.
Yeah. Because that's a lot of that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think that I was ever taught about... I think that I was given great coping skills, but I don't know that I was ever... Like, none of it was ever verbalized. Like, I don't have the vocabulary to talk about... Or I have given myself the vocabulary to talk about my emotional feelings or, like, what this dark side is or any of that. But, like, that's not something that was spoken about in my house. It's something that was, like, acted upon, but I didn't know how to talk about it. And so I think that because nobody spoke about it, it felt very lonely. I felt like I was the only one going through these things. And then learning later on that it's just, like, very human.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I still have, like, the residual, like, you have to get over this really fast when nobody sees it. Get over it right now. So, like, learning how to be patient with myself was another really good practice. But it's all been painful. Like,
well, any type of learning or growing,
it's
painful.
Oh my God! Which is another reason why I'm like, can we be done now?
Yeah.
The painful part is really, really terrible. Can we be done?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not very good at that part, but.
How did you get into meditating before you went back to school?
So when I was in Los Angeles, which is where I lived before going to school, I used to help run a yoga studio.
Oh.
Yeah. I wasn't a teacher. I was just an administrator. I took advantage
of It's not a bad place
yoga.
To work,
no,
though.
Not at all. It was great. And I met some really, really astonishingly cool people. I met Jean Heilemann, who is an actress, but also is like a yoga superstar genius Buddha woman. And she taught tantric meditation. And I would work during her shift, and it was me and Kat Buckley working, and Kat would let me go in and meditate, which was really super lovely, because I was very stressed out at that time. And working at a yoga studio, I was stressed out. Like, that's my starting line, is just high. And then I was also working with this wonderful man named Pete Lee, and he taught me... He's a Kundalini teacher, and he taught me about all of these breathing exercises, and he actually led our yoga studio, like, all of the employees on this, like, this meditation that's about, it's an intentional meditation, so, not like you're intentionally doing it, but, like, you set an intention in terms of, like, or you find your intention while you're meditating, which I thought was crazy. Like, there's this point in the meditation where he's just like, what's the first word that comes into your brain? Great. Let's do that. So I started meditating, doing that, and it was a 60-day challenge that he gave everybody at the studio. And so I did it, and it was around that time that I was starting to audition for graduate schools, and it was around that time that, like, just a lot more pressure was being put on me, but also, like, doors were opening and things were happening, which generally terrify me. And so this meditation was, like, really great and very empowering, and meditation also makes me feel like I'm not alone in, like, a very, like, hippy-dippy way. It just makes me feel, like, weirdly connected to everything. That sounds so...
I love it. Maybe I need to go to a class to kind of get started, because I feel like I've had several people talk about meditating. It's not something I've ever been drawn to. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I were going to try to start it just in my apartment by myself, I wouldn't get very far.
Right, because sitting in silence is like, why?
I just let myself get distracted so easily. Yeah.
But these were cool. I'll send you the link to it. Pete taught us this one meditation that was not just about sitting in silence. Sitting in silence meditations are really hard for me. But Pete made it, like I said before, there was, like, an intention behind it. So it was, like, for 3 minutes you did this, for 3 minutes you did this, for 3 minutes you did this, and you're focusing your attention on something.
Right.
Which made it easier to just sit and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the things you were focusing your attention on were, like, picture your body being filled up with gold. Like... I know that sounds really silly, but like,
no, but you have it. You have something that you're focusing on right. That's a little clearer.
That's not
yeah,
like, that that helps. It helps ease the other little thoughts away.
Yeah.
It doesn't kick them out. They're just like sitting patiently, waiting for their turn, I guess, as mm-hmm. opposed to all of them fighting at the same time to be like, I want your attention. it's like, no, calm down. I'm going to fill myself up with gold first, and then you guys can jump all over me.
Yes. How long were you out of college before you decided that you wanted to go back to school?
I was out of college for 5 minutes. And actually, it was before. I was just like, we had like people come in. I went to school in Miami, New World School of the Arts, which was a great program. I spoke with my dean because I was like, so what do you do now that you leave college? And like, I get like acting, right? So it's all gonna fall in my lap. How does that work?
Right.
And
I can't wait.
This is amazing. Why doesn't everyone do this? So she was like, no, it's going to be terrible. There's going to be awful struggle. You're going to really regret doing this.
You're like, why didn't you tell me this 4 years ago?
Wait a second. Right. But she was telling me that it was going to be really, really hard and she would be there for me and, you know, I'd email whenever she needed. And I was like, no, I won't be doing the struggling part. I'm going to go straight into a graduate school and then straight into fame.
Perfect.
Whatever that looks like, right? Whatever success
great plan.
Looks like.
Right.
Yeah, it was a great plan. It was foolproof. I auditioned for Yale right after.
Mm-hmm.
I auditioned for Yale and did I? And I think I auditioned for it. Nope, just Yale. I think it was just Yale. And I got pretty far and I made it to like the end of the day because Yale does this like very grueling thing, or did when I was auditioning. Where it was like, you audition like 800 times.
Right.
In one day. They are like, yes, we'd like to see you. Then everybody wants to see you. Then just one person wants to see you again. Then can you sing? Then can you do your seventh? Yeah, whatever. So I made it to the place where like, you get to talk to Ron Van Loo.
Ooh.
And it was like, I was looking hot. I felt really good about my pieces. I made it all the way through the end of the day. And I was like, we're done, right? And then he was like, no, I'd like to know who you are. And I was like,
wait.
No. Yeah. So that was, I like totally, am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Yeah,
I
go
shit
for
the
it.
Bed. I supremely shit the bed. And he was so sweet. He just like looked across the table with like these mommy eyes. And he was like, you need to see the world.
Oh.
Very good. You need to see the world. And I was like, I knew, right, I hadn't gotten in, and it was really devastating.
That's so interesting that he said that to you out loud, though, instead of just thinking it.
Right. No, it was. It was really spectacular. I felt like somebody had run a sword through me.
Of course.
But in retrospect, right, that was, like, the best thing he could have ever done. Because I was, like, in that same, like, great, we'll get it done in 15 minutes.
I'm going to go. I'll be back.
Yeah. I'm going to see the world, and then I'll see you in 25 minutes. Great.
Okay.
And then you'll accept me, and then my plan will continue. So for a year, I was devastated, like, mm-hmm. really heartbroken. I thought, Miami is a wonderful town, but it feels like a really small town sometimes when you want to do certain things with your life.
Right.
When you want to... I don't know, say act. it's really small. And I worked with unbelievable people there. Like really, really genuinely extraordinary talented people. But there's a very small pool. And like, if you're not the flavor of the week, then you're not the flavor of the week. And I felt really... scared and alone, and that year was really rough for me because I thought like, oh, okay, well then that means that's it. That's the dark curse. Like they didn't want you because you're unwantable.
Mm.
And so, and then I auditioned the next year and didn't even like make it through the first round.
Oof.
And I did it in San Francisco, which was a really weird choice for me, but I did it in San Francisco. And then I learned about this place in Bristol, the Bristol Vic, that does like an overseas intensive. And so I was like, he told me to see the world. I must go see the world. And so I did. I went and I did that program, and I was accepted to that program, which was awesome. And
how long were you there?
I was there for almost 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. And I worked with some, like, real cool people who are now all on television or in movies.
Uh-huh.
That was incredible. Like, watching, because, like, the British invasion hadn't happened yet. I was just in class with those people, which was crazy. Like, now to look back and be like, oh, my God, we're all storming the gates. I know.
Good for you.
Guys.
Take me with you.
That's how long I took before go like before other
So shows. You were still in school then. You just went a different route.
Yeah. And then
I see.
But then like I came back. I was kicked out of England cuz I got an agent there but I had no green card.
Right, of course.
So they were like you should get married or leave. And I almost got married. Thank God I didn't.
That's so hard. There's several international students from Juilliard who I know just have such a hard time because they mm-hmm. or their visa, they're only allowed to work as an actor, mm-hmm. which we know is hard.
Impossible.
And so it's a real struggle.
Yeah. Our work is so fickle. You have to do other little things.
Yeah, if you have to pay rent.
Yeah, hello. but I didn't actually go to grad school until 2012, and I had auditioned in 2006.
So originally,
yeah. So 6 years. I waited a long time, a good long time. I did a ton of work. I also quit acting.
Tell me about that. Tell me about that.
When I was in England, I did some dancing,
mm-hmm.
and I messed up my back.
Ooh.
But at the Old Vic, they treat you like you're a prized pony, and they also have free healthcare.
Amazing.
So healthcare was amazing there. And, I mean, I was going to an osteopath and a physical therapist, like, every other day, alternating. Like, it was incredible. They really were. I felt like I was a thoroughbred.
Wow.
And,
that's incredible.
Yeah. And so, I think I was, like, 65 to 75% better. And then I had to come back to the States where I had nothing. And I was like, that's okay. I'll keep doing my, like, little exercises. And that doesn't work. And then I was dating someone who's at Juilliard who put me in touch with one of the people who, you know, mess around with the dancers.
With the PT.
Yeah. And then and started to go to them. But my back was so bad that that I would have to take, like, cold baths.
Ooh.
Like little, like, ice baths. And my boyfriend at the time, Marco, got me a cane because I was limping so bad.
Jeez.
Yeah. And that was really, really rough. but he quickly was scooped up by people in LA, and so we moved to LA, and I was like, we had a long conversation about it, I think, and it was like, you need to heal. Because what I was doing was like working myself really hard. I hadn't gone to a graduate school program that people knew. I felt like I didn't know anybody in this city. And so I was working myself really hard to get to know people and so people could see me and, you know, all that. And then in the evening time, like, I was barely able to move. So Marco was like, all right, listen, we're going to LA. You need to get your shit in track. Like, you need to heal. And then do whatever you want from there. But, like, you can't keep doing this thing where you, like, keep running yourself into a wall.
Right.
Whatever. He was smart, I guess. So I quit acting for a time, but really, as I started to meet people in the industry, I was like, I don't think I like this anymore. Maybe I'll just coast and be like a person without a purpose for a while, which felt terrifying, and I was depressed for 6 months.
Uh-huh.
Because like I said, everything's on a schedule. You got 15 minutes to cry, you've got like...
Right.
And so like being a person without a purpose... Or, you know, learning what my new purpose was, which was really just to heal myself and, like, put myself first, which was not something I was used to. Yeah, that was really scary. And that's how I quit acting. And I was really just, like, doing yoga and drinking green juices and meditating and, like...
Being in LA.
Yeah, and being in LA, but not being an actor in LA, which is, like, a very different experience.
Yeah, I'm sure it's always in your face.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Marco was, I was going to parties with him, and so, like, I would meet people and see people, and it always felt like everybody was just, like, climbing. And not everybody. That's not the right word to use, but there were many people that
yeah, there's an energy of that in the air.
In the air. But also, then I found the people who didn't do that. Like not feeling the need to compete with these people also gave me a great perspective, and it adjusted my compass.
Yeah. Well done.
But yeah, I was able to see, like, oh, you guys suck.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't need you because I...
And even if you go back, like, I don't want to function like that.
Yes. And it gave me a perspective, because, you know, I think as a hungry young actor, you're constantly, like, you're like, it doesn't feel good, but if everybody's doing it, I guess, maybe.
Right. Maybe I have to.
Is the right way to do things? I don't know any better.
Maybe I need to join Snapchat.
Oh, God. You don't have to anymore? It's on Instagram. No, yeah, it's silly things that you think you have to do because the flock is doing it, and yeah, and it feels safer in the flock.
Yeah.
But not being a part of the flock was, like, eye-opening. It felt really painful, too, because I was like, oh, you're doing that job? That's cool. I would like to also be murdered in a movie and scream my heart out. That sounds so fun. Oh, you're playing Romeo and Juliet. I know that play.
Just let me say the lines for you. Just give me a second. So once you healed, what was it that you were like, okay, I still want to go to grad school? Instead of, like, I'm going to try to get an agent and audition.
Right, or just never.
Or do something else.
Yeah. I was working at this yoga studio, which really was, like, the center of my universe, but also, like, it was exactly where I needed to
be. I'm going to take notes. Get day job at yoga studio. Okay.
But it really, this place, Center for Yoga in Los Angeles on Larchmont. was a very special place for me because it, like, I have friends from there that are, like, I consider ride or dies. Like, I don't talk to them every day, but I know that if I called Kat Buckley right now, she'd be like, do you need me on a plane? I will get on a plane and I will come to you. And same.
It's like fantastic.
She's a really, truly incredible person. I got a call from a mentor of mine named Percy, who was like, I got a call from Janet Zarich. She knew that you and I were friends and wanted to know if you were re-auditioning, because I had auditioned and gotten waitlisted at NYU the year before. And I was like, I've quit acting. I'll never do it again. And he was like, I'm just going to repeat my question. So this person, who is the head of a very big program, has asked for you by name. Are you going back? And I was like, okay. Right, I get it now. Maybe? And he was like, there's not, stop, just, okay, you need to go, and then he gave me, like, he was like, you need to go get coached, you need to go do this, you haven't been doing this for a long time, whatever, find somebody, and you have to get to these auditions. And I was like, ooh, I don't know that I want to. So, again, like, all of these amazing things that fell into my lap while I was sitting at the studio, this woman, Patty, pointed me in the direction of Gregory Berger Sobeck, who was a coach out there and now works for Yale. He had gone to Yale, and he was like, we worked together a couple of times, and he was like, I think you're onto something, but you hot, like, you know, he gave me his assessment of me, which was, like, very powerful, because he had no reason to be nice to me, which was great. Like, yes, I was giving him money, but also... he has tons of clients. Like, he didn't need me to be his client.
Right.
And so he was unbelievably nice. Or nice. He was unbelievably honest. And, which was, like, a huge slap in the face for me because, you know, I came from a smaller pool of people in Miami and then in Bristol. Like, these... and everybody in England is just nice. They're just nice. Like, everybody is. Like, their critiques were always just, like... could have been better, but wonderful go. You know, like, they never felt like critiques. They never felt negative. So hearing this man, like, give me some real talk was huge. And he was also like, are you auditioning for Yale? And I was like, no, I'm bro. They don't like me. And he was like, I really think you should. And he paid for my entrance fee.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet.
I know. It was a lot of very special people that led to me doing anything. Like, really special people that all kind of lined up. And I feel forever indebted to them.
So having gone back to school and done an intensive 3-year MFA program, you've been out for what, 2 years now? A little over 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling about being in New York and kind of tackling after grad school the more mainstream path of like, I'm gonna audition.
Doing it, yeah. I wasn't gonna be in New York.
I
was gonna go back to Los Angeles. It was weird. I had my showcase and I felt like I came to New York and I thought that this was gonna be like all the weird theater people were gonna be like, come, we recognize you, come into the fold. And everyone was kind of like, so you can sell toothpaste? We don't know what else to do with you. So I was heartbroken about New York. And LA was like, yes, totally, meet all of everybody. And I had like a much more successful time there. I got a manager there. The agencies that like were interested in me were like much larger than I had ever anticipated out there. And so I came back to New York and I was going to do 2 shows. I was doing The Fatal Egg with Dustin Wills and then Ermintrude and Esmeralda with Margot Bordelon at AntFest. And I was like, great. Once those 2 things are done, I'm out of here. And I also had a boyfriend at the time, which I'm sure sort of led to my like, well, maybe I'll stay.
Right.
Because my manager called and was like, you know, this agency's New York office wants to see you in this show. And I was like, this is such a bad idea. It's so hot and there's no AC in this little studio at EST. Like, oh God, this is going to be a nightmare.
Right.
But they liked me and they asked me to stay. So I stayed because it was like, well, I don't know. Like, somebody has faith in me, I guess. So I guess I'll stay with them.
Awesome.
They're in my corner, I'll stay. And how has it been? I don't know. How do I like New York now? I thought I was going to hate it. I was ready to hate it. The smells and the mean people and nothing is easy to get to. And I had that, right? Like, I had a very dark first year out. And then, I don't know. The community here is unlike anything I've ever experienced. I've never met such generous, smart, entertaining, benevolent people who just want to, like, give you opportunities. And I don't mean like opportunities to like be a star. I mean like opportunities for friendship, opportunities for conversation, like opportunities for, I mean, outreach. Like the number of friends that I have who do bigger things than themselves all of the time. And these are artists, these are actors, these are people who like want to remain relevant, not in the world of pop culture, but relevant in like our human evolution and just like being helpful to humanity. That's amazing. I'm not trying to despair. Like, this isn't about like LA versus
New York. No.
But I think that I found that more here. Maybe because I luckily had more friends who were doing that anyway.
Can I ask you about your writing?
Yeah.
And when you started writing and I know you have the Insta mini series and that you write other things, which I would love to hear about.
Sure.
But it's so important to be creating your own opportunities.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear what you think about that.
So, I mean, really, Nikki Borges created the opportunity for Insta mini series. I think that she saw a platform that wasn't being utilized yet, and she was like, I have a lot of very talented friends, and I have a lot of people who have camera equipment. And this is going to cost us no dollars to make. So let's just do it. Like, why not? So she got to know Questlove during the Jimmy Fallon show when she was working for them. And he, like, took her under his wing and was like, he mentors her, which is this is what I mean when I'm like, people care.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Like, so Nikki, like, and, you know, she just approached him and was like, this is my idea. Do you think it's dumb? And he was like, no, run with it. Fly. Go. I can be in one of the episodes to, like, you That's know, help fun. You guys out. And it was so lovely.
And so you've helped to write the episodes as well.
When it started, it was just her and a couple of people, and then I graduated, and like
you're like, I'm back, guys.
Yeah,
hi.
It was like they were about to start filming Silent Brooklyn, and she was like, do you know any writers? And I was like, I could maybe. And she was like, great. This is the format. What we'd like is this. What could happen is this. And I was like, I like racked my brains. I got a little bit drunk with her at her bar. And then I went to go see a movie with someone, and on my way to go see this movie, because I got lost, of course, because New York is impossible a little sometimes, I came up with this idea, and I came up with a ton of ideas. I pitched them to her, and she was just like, I don't know. 3 months later, she was like, I can't get this one idea out of my head, so let's make it. And so that's how that started. And then I got along so well, I think, with the whole team. And the product was okay. It was pretty good. I think that...
I haven't seen the first part of what you guys did. I've only seen the pushing buttons, more recent stuff.
Oh, yeah. Which is super fun. So Nikki just asked me to, like, be the writer there. And mostly what I do is, because we obviously want to give a lot of other people opportunities to write, other people have come on and I've sort of guided their storytelling because it's such limited time. Mm-hmm. Now it's a minute, which is like, oh my God, it's an ungodly amount of time compared to 15 seconds. So I would kind of guide them in terms of structuring episodes. And that led to working on some, like, I've written commercials now because of this team.
Really?
Yeah, weirdly. We are working on, like, a couple of other big projects. I've gotten to work with these two guys called... the Donovan Ensemble, who I think are like the funniest. They are just the funniest people you could ever meet. Like you must see them. They're improvisers and they're sketch writers and they're singers. They're opera singers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. They're perfect. And they're all, and they're both very, very attractive. they're an ensemble, but it's only two of them.
But what yeah. gave you, have you always written when you were younger, or like what gave you the spark to be like, I could do this. instead of being like, no, that's not who I am. I'm an actor.
Well, I struggle with that a lot. In college, my dean was like, you can't do both. Because I liked to, I was like 1 foot in the art department, 1 foot in the theater department. And I would like spend nights up with my boyfriend at the time, like painting pieces. And, or maybe, like, watching him paint pieces. And,
like you do. College.
Whatever. College. And, making out in paint. and she, like, sat me down and she was like, you have to choose one. And I was like, no. And she was like, you have to choose one. Like, for real, though.
And what she meant was probably, like, academically at this college, you have to choose one.
Right.
Little did she know. In the real world.
But she gave me the look. Like,
you don't have to choose.
No, yeah. And she gave me the look like, you need to discipline yourself in one of these. Because this is going to be the one that you, like, do, that you ride forever. And I think she saw a lot of, like, potential and possibility in me, which was very nice of her. But it's always something that stuck in my head where I was like, you can't be both. But I've been writing since I was little. I really loved comic books. I used to make comic books. One of the things, Nikki and I have known each other since high school.
Uh-huh.
And well, this is really weird. So there is this big retreat. We went to a Catholic school. There's this big retreat at the end of your senior year, and you write these things called palancas. I don't know where that word came from.
Okay.
No idea. But they're like notes of encouragement and love to the person who's on this retreat, who's like fighting. And I wrote her, and I was super anti all of this stuff. I was like, I'm not that kid. I'm the artist kid in the back.
Right.
But I wrote her, I drew her a really long and kind of very beautiful comic book. And I inked it, and I, like, did, yeah. Like, I was that kid. I was constantly.
And your bond
stories.
Was formed.
And my bond, yeah, forever. But I used to do a lot of comic books. I used to write little short stories as, like, a child. And then I was dating a writer for a long time. And so basically most of my like, I never wrote, but I would love to read and, like,
right.
give thoughts.
Well, and I'm sure you saw a lot of his process, too,
yes.
in those years.
Yeah, totally. And also, like, he was lucky enough to go to Juilliard, and I was lucky enough to sit in the back of the room sometimes
mm-hmm.
And listen to Marsha Norman talk. Like, what? That's incredible. And also, like, I had the opportunity of, like, I was in England, I was very, very homesick, and I wrote this monologue about, God, it's complicated, but whatever, I wrote this thing, and I wrote it while we were in London for Christmas. He like, surprised me in England and, like, took me to this, like, place, and it was this crazy house that, like, it was, like, 6 feet. It was 6 floors.
Uh-huh.
But each floor was just, like, one room. It was so strange. So, anyway, the kitchen was all the way on the sixth floor. And I was up there. He was sick downstairs in bed. And I stayed up until, like, 3 a.m. writing this thing in, like, one go. Like,
uh-huh.
one angry go. I just really missed my home. And I think he, like, stumbled upon it in the morning and read it and was like, this is good. What are you doing? This is great. So, I don't know. It's, guys who are listening, be encouraging. Because it really helps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he was nice enough, and he's still nice enough to read my stuff when I need notes or help. He talks to me about structure. He, like,
that's awesome.
Lucky. Again, another wonderful person who just came into my life.
Yeah.
So nice, these people. And then I took Joan McIntosh's class at Yale. It's not an elective. You have to.
Is it a playwriting class?
It's not. It's called Creating Actor-Generated Work.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Which is basically, like, what else do you like to do is what the class should be called. Like, what else do you want to work on? Somebody in class learned how to cook. Somebody in class learned how to build things. Like, he was just like, I really want to build a house, but I'll start with a chair. And, like, learned carpentry. But because we had these weekly... I mean, and people would come in with, like, scenes and, you know, songs, and somebody wrote an entire musical, which is really beautiful. Because we had this structure of having to show up every other week, you would show your whatever your progress was. Whatever that was, I mean, like, having somebody to account, like, to hold you accountable was super vital. And Joan McIntosh is the kindest, sweetest. So, like, it wasn't like she was going to yell at you if you didn't do anything, but it was this wonderful womb-like opportunity.
Yeah, so that's, like, so wonderful that they
yeah.
add that to the curriculum.
Incredible.
And you focused on writing during that?
I heard about writers' rooms in Los Angeles, and I heard about them enough to be like, okay, I think I know how they work. And so you break down a season. I'm going to break a mini-series. I'm going to break the episode, which is what they call it, but I was going to break the season. And we had this one room called the OSR, the old sound room, and it was, it's our voice and speech room. And it has 6 whiteboards.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, it was the most perfect thing in the world. I broke it down into 6 episodes. Each episode got a whiteboard. I
uh-huh.
figured everything out in a weekend. Like, and then I would go in and I wrote a pilot. And
it's amazing.
And the other thing,
and just figured out how that format works.
Yeah. It just gave me an opportunity to, again, it was just encouragement. It was just the encouragement to be like, you want to learn how to do handstands? You want to be the best person at handstands? Go be the best person. Like,
that's awesome.
It was a really wonderful thing. And nobody in there knew. Like, it wasn't like I was going to come in and they were going to be like, oh, well, actually, that's not how you... Nobody in there was an authority on how any of this stuff works.
Right.
So I could go in there and I could have totally lied. And I could have totally, like, BS'd my way through. But I don't know. Joan McIntosh is a magical woman. So, like, there was no reason to. But
as actors, like, that's what you need to do for yourself after you graduate. So that's wonderful that they put it in the curriculum. Like, you need to set these goals for yourself.
Yeah.
You need to create structure in your structureless life when you're not working and decide to do things for yourself. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So that was, like, a really exciting thing. And then Aaliyah Monty Brown, who was a classmate of mine, she created a, like, writer's group. Her mom has this beautiful house and studio on Great Jones Street, which, like, that she bought in the 70s for $5. Like, amazing. So Aaliyah opened up those doors to us creatively and was like, you have this whole studio. We have an entire month. What does everyone want to do? And so my writing partner, Gabe Levy, and I were like, we'll run a writer's workshop. We call it a gym because, like, I don't know how to teach writing. There's no reason for me to teach writing. I don't know what I'm doing. But we just kind of, like, facilitated these little games that we made up for writing. Like round robins, and we stole from other groups, and we, you know, borrowed things and then altered them for us. But Aaliyah was the person who was like, here's all of this space, which was wonderful. That's how I started and continued. And then, you know, people, Gabe was in my class at Jones, in Jones, because we were a big group. They divided us into two groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was in my group with Joan, and he wrote, like, an angel. Like, I would get so excited about when he was going to show, because his writing was, like, spectacular. I didn't even want to be in the reading, because I just wanted to sit and listen. And I would give him some really forceful notes, but because I was, like, so excited, I was like, oh my god! Someone who's been so smart! About writing. And then he approached me, like, weeks after we graduated and was like, hey, I want to write this weird thing. Do you want to do it with me? And so we started to, like, work together as writers.
Awesome.
Yeah. And that's one of the projects I'm working on. And then I'm also working on another one with Francesca Ramsey.
That's
like
great.
Like a weird sitcom-y, silly thing. But, like, it's these things all happen on the weekend, on downtime,
yeah,
whenever we can.
It helps to have someone to be accountable to, though.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And it really just took that, like, leap of faith for him to be, like, for any of us to have been like, hey, do you want to do this thing with me, please?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit? I mean, you already spoke about your family a little bit, but what do they make of your life as an artist, you making that choice? Are any of them in creative fields?
No.
I know you're the youngest.
Yes.
Of three, right?
Yes. I'm the youngest of three. My two older sisters are, like, a lot older than me. I was the little oops. and none of that. I mean, my oldest sister, Letty, is incredibly creative. And she is totally the reason. Maybe she's not the reason that I'm creative, but she definitely fed it. Like, she made it obese. She was like, we grew up in, like, a pretty not so cultured neighborhood in Hialeah, and she would do trips with me to museums and to see art house films. And she taught me. I was like definitely a trained pet. She was like, what's the best caviar? And I would be like, beluga. What's the best? And I'm 5 years old.
I have no idea what this means.
Concept of these things. These are just, it's call and repeat. What's the best champagne? And, and why would you even know that? Like,
yeah, why does she know that?
I know. That was, like, very far away from our lives. Like, caviar and champagne were not things that were at parties that we were going to. Even in magazines that we were reading, I have no idea, but she took me to my first play. It was Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes.
It was. And I saw The Assless Traps, and I thought, I have to do this one. but Letty's like a very good writer. She's a super brain. Anytime I write anything, I'll send it to her and I'll be like, does this make sense? Is the syntax okay? What do you think?
That's so great that that she can do that for you.
But, like, none of us are, not none of us, but I don't think that we were raised in, like, a creative household. Mom and Dad were, like, working their butts off to keep us in private school. And, I mean, working their butts off. And they both, they came, the immigrant experience sort of I think it limits that possibility sometimes. Like, right? I think that my father had inclinations to draw. But like all of those things were sort of cut short, and it was like, now you have to feed yourself.
Right.
Like, keep clothes on your back. This, you no longer have the safety net of your family, because everyone is so spread out now, because everyone's just trying to get out of a country.
Yeah. Are both your parents Cuban?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, nobody was really, and theater specifically, my cousin Rosanna had actually, she died very, very young, sadly, in like a very tragic car accident. And she was in theater, and she went to New World for, she was my mom's twin sister's stepdaughter.
Hmm.
Lots of, but she passed away, and she had like this big crate of plays that I inherited and still have. But yeah, other than that, like, my mother loves poetry. She used to read Rumi to me as I was going to bed. It was like the Bible and Rumi. Those were my bedtime stories.
This explains so much. But your parents have been supportive of you,
yes,
taking this path.
And I think that they've been supportive because I've always been really weird. Like,
they're like, oh, maybe this makes sense.
Yeah. I think that, like, my two sisters both made good, like, as professionals. And then they were like, yeah, you do the other weird thing. That's fine. The other two have done great. We are super, we feel very proud of them. They both have master's degrees. They have surpassed all of the things that we ever expected. And now the little one, you can, I don't know, go play with mud. Right? Yeah, you can do whatever you want. They've been nothing but supportive. And they've also, like, I think that it is that, like, immigrant mentality of, like, you have to be, like, the best.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get things for free here.
Yeah.
Like, we would have back there, but here, they don't know us yet. So, like, you have to, like, run faster, hit harder, be smarter than everybody. I remember growing up, again, much younger than my sisters. And I got my own room, like, when I was 10 or something. And in the closet in my room was the air conditioning unit and all of my sister's trophies. And so I would open this thing and I would look at all of these trophies and I would be like, mine's gonna be taller. I viscerally remember the moment of seeing them and being like, oh, this is a lot of pressure.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That's so funny.
Yeah. What was the question?
No, you answered it. Just about how your family has reacted to you taking the artistic path. That's great that they're so supportive.
They've been nothing but supportive. And my dad, bless his heart, he will always, whenever I call, he'll always be like, your room is always here. If you ever need it, just come back and rest for a little while.
That's so sweet.
I know you're working hard. Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary.
Well, I'm sure they miss you too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Thank you.
Can I ask, just because I know this is something that Frankie deals with too, like, have you found it a challenge, like the types of auditions you get as a Latina actress, or the community you found here in New York, or kind of that balance between like wanting to tell certain kinds of stories or also wanting to get the opportunity to tell other stories that aren't about your culture?
Yeah.
Like, has that been challenging at all?
Hugely challenging. Our listeners can't see me, but I'm pretty fair-skinned, and I have green eyes on a good day, and I kind of look like I'm from nowhere in particular. I look like people have been like, what? You speak Spanish? You look like you're from the Midwest. Yeah, for sure. And that's become a huge issue. And I think I guess leaving Miami, where it's like this homogenized place where it's like, but everyone looks like me and looks like a little bit darker versions of me. Like, we all speak Spanish or French or Creole or some other beautiful language. And this is this is the melting pot. America,
right.
Hooray.
Right.
And then you leave the 305 and go into any other area code in Florida, and it suddenly very different. I remember my friends from West Palm, who I went to school with in Miami, heard me speaking Spanish to my mom. And, I mean, they'd been in class with me for 3 years, knew my last name was Fernandez, knew that I came from a Cuban background, and, like, were still awestruck. So I think that when I walk into a room with casting directors, I don't look like what they anticipate. And my agents still will fight for me to go into rooms because I am fluent in Spanish, and my sister is currently right now laughing. She's like, no, you're not. You're not fluent. Come on, girl. Like, I can't say blueberries in Spanish. Okay, fine. I'm not often asked to. But, like, I speak Spanish. It was my first language. I read in Spanish. I grew up in an entire culture that was, like, just Spanish speakers. I think that, like, for the first 10 years of my life, my parents only spoke Spanish back to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not because they weren't fluent, but because they wanted to continue
right. That
education. And so I would never lose it. And I think that, like, when I walk in, people get confused when I walk into rooms. Like, casting directors are like, wait a second, you're married to a person named Fernandez? How is this working?
Right.
So
you're a little bit stuck in the middle between, like, can I play this person mm-hmm. from Ohio, or are you not going to let me play this person who's
right
from Cuba?
Right. I mean, I've gone in for all of these. I mean, Cuba's very, like, fashionable right now. So I've gone in for a couple of roles, TV and film and theater, of Latinas, and I have been told by casting directors, we are going darker.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, that sentence was said. And you know, you don't look exactly like what we're looking for. I think that this is partially why I want to write. Because I think that part of my hope is that I can create work for people who aren't going to get it because they don't, I'm making quote fingers, listeners, like the things that people often see.
Well, and people's imaginations are so limited.
Yes. And, you know, you see a certain kind of Latino on television. I mean, any person of color, right? We become boxed in because this is the thing that you're used to. And, like, I think unconsciously you just begin to believe that myth that you're being fed over and over again by media. You know, I had this conversation with a friend of mine who is Italian and Jamaican, and she looks more Puerto Rican than I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes in for things all the time, and that are, I mean, Spanish-speaking roles. This doesn't happen very often for her anymore because she's finally been like, guys, I don't, I just can't, you can't do that to me anymore.
Right.
You can't send me into this room. And
I don't speak Spanish.
I can't even fake it. I mean, maybe she can fake it, but it's been, like, an interesting conversation because at the same time, right, like, she did a Stephen Aldegarde's play, and she was built for this play, right? Like, it was Motherfucker with the Hat, and she, like, of course she should be in this play. This is a perfect part for her, but it's a part that I would love to play one day, too, because, like, I connect to it very deeply, and like, New York is such a huge part of his work, right? So it makes perfect sense that this woman does it, who is a New York native, born and raised here, and she understands this like it's her second skin, this character. But I think that I become limited for roles like that, and people are, like, more, I don't know, more apt to have me in a Three Sisters or in any other American playwrights thing, but at the same time, like, it's an interesting thing. It's complicated because I think that my last name will also, like, hinder me from getting certain roles because it's like, well, she is Latina, and, like, in certain, I mean, maybe she's just not tan right now, but this is going to be summer. Like, I mean, these are, like,
Jesus,
real things that people think about. And I, on the one hand, I get it, and on the other hand, I think that it's antiquated.
Yeah.
And, like, we need to start thinking in bigger ways about casting and what color means and And while it is an incredibly important topic that you have to keep in mind while you're casting, you know, there's years of history and, like, what the implications are if you cast, I don't know, a black man as Solioni or, you know, whatever, right. What those implications are. You have to also think about, I don't know, don't we want to see things that look like our world? I want to watch a show. I'm watching The Get Down right now.
I haven't started it yet.
Oh my God. It's like, oh shit, like you guys made a show about what my childhood looked like.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible. Thank you. I was not born in the 70s. Relax. That was something that was so special to me, and I'm reading reviews and everyone's like, it's a beautiful mess. And maybe that's true, but it also is like, it's so much more important than that. It's so crazy important to me that, like, I don't know, that my nieces feel like their bodies are reflected on television.
Yeah.
You know, all of them. Because if I showed you pictures of my nieces, there are four of them, and they are literally the color of the rainbow. They are all of the colors. One of them looks like she's Snow White. Like, for real. Blue eyes, blonde hair.
Yeah.
Like, pale, pale, pale skin. Can't go out in the sun so pale. But, like, she's still a perfectly functional Spanish-speaking, like, she feels that Latinness.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. But you know what I mean?
I know this is a huge conversation.
Yeah.
And we can only just touch on it a little,
right.
But I wanted to ask you because it's such a weird line that is being imposed on you guys in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, but it exists. It's a hard conversation to have, but I'm glad that it's being had.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you're writing too, because that's what it takes. Is like,
Yeah. You
know, if we just leave it to the people who have been writing stories for hundreds of years, then they're just going to keep doing what they've been doing.
Yeah,
yeah,
like. I can't wait to see or write a character that, like, looks like Frankie, reads Gabriel Garcia Marquez, but also, like, really loves country music. Like, this is the country that we
yeah.
were born into, and this is the media that we know, and this is the, like, we're
and especially first-generation kids, it's like, they're drawing from a whole different experience. They're not from the place their parents are from, but they're... They're not just from Florida,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's been a huge conversation. Well, a good friend of mine, Rosie Herrera, she's a dancer and a choreographer, and she talks about this all the time, about the, like, straddling,
mm-hmm.
how we, like, live in a straddle, these first gens, because, like, we are from here.
Yeah, of course.
But, not according to a lot of people.
Right.
And also, like, our cultural sensitivities are different. You know, I call Miami North Cuba because, like, nothing that happens there happens anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's a different country, it feels like.
Well, I have a few more questions.
Okay.
We've been talking for a long time. I don't want to keep you too long.
I can do
very shortly, because I feel like he will be annoyed if I don't ask you, because I asked him about you. You're dating another actor, the wonderful Nate Miller, who has been a guest on this podcast.
Now everyone knows.
But I know that you've dated a writer in the past, and but how is it for you in this part of your life to be in a relationship with another artist?
I have never not been in a relationship with an artist. I have only dated artists, visual artists, writers, actors. I think that, I mean, honestly, it's a huge blessing. I mean, it's always been a blessing. I always say I have excellent taste and I've only dated really good people.
Yeah.
And, but Nate specifically is like a very, oh my God, I'm going to gush about this guy that I'm dating. It's going to be recorded forever.
You don't have to talk about him specifically if you don't want, but I'm saying, like, how does it help your life as an artist to have someone who understands and all of that?
I mean, it's huge, right? Like, he understands the time and the space that I need. He also understands the kind of help that I need. He also understands the kind of quiet that I need.
Yeah.
He also understands the kind of, like, just hold my hand that I need.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that, and this isn't necessarily it helps that he's an artist, but I have also dated artists in the past that are selfish. I've also dated artists in the past that are aloof, mm-hmm. who don't have, like, a process that's like me, or are, you know, the flip side of dating an artist that's the not good side of dating an artist is like, oh, you are just as selfish as I am. And I mean selfish not in the, like, a negative, shitty Gollum-y way, but, like, but, like, I mean it in the way that, like, people need a lot of time to themselves as artists.
Yeah.
They need a lot of time with their work. I mean, I think it's only been positive. It's only ever been positive. And he can, like, help me with tapes, which is amazing.
Yes. Very helpful.
But that's like, really silly. I mean, all kinds of people help me with tapes. But I think it's mostly the support. I think it's also knowing when to clap. Right? That's a big deal. It's knowing when to clap. He's very good at it. He's very good at, like, knowing when I need the, like, extra push of, like, no, yes, you can. You totally can. And also knowing when I get really excited about something to be like, but who knows how long that's for? You know, he never diminishes me. He never overputs me on a pedestal. I think it's that. I think it's knowing when to clap, and it's knowing when to, like, hold someone down when they're floating away because they're, like, so overly excited.
Right. Like, the realism versus yes. the encouragement.
Yeah. And both live in realism with him, which is super cool. We have never had the, like, I have with other artists that I've dated, that, like, moment of jealousy.
Mm.
And, like, the moment that slipped into a relationship, things got real weird real fast.
Yeah.
And that's never happened. And also, I don't know that it can with him. He's so, like, whatever, cool, peace and love. He also, like, runs his own thing, which I find very attractive.
Yeah.
Like, not because he runs something, but because it's amazing to see someone with ambition who wants to do something and who also, like, isn't sucking the life out of me, because the thing that he wants to do is not all about me.
Right.
The thing that he wants, like, he's very taken care of in his own path, and so am I. This also might have to do with age.
Yeah. Like, it's not like you're dating when you're 19.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is like, oh my god, Romeo and Juliet, like, oh my god, I'd die for you. Like, I've had that with an artist too, and that's really exciting. But it's also, like, it's
exhausting.
It's exhausting. That's a very good word for it. Yeah, so that's what dating an artist is like. This is very embarrassing.
Well, we can cut it out later if you want me to. Are there any concrete things that you reach for again and again if you're really having a day where you're down, like books or places you go or anything?
Yeah. When I first got to the city, I had a really horrible audition, and right across the street from the MoMA, and I cried, and then I walked into the MoMA, and I sat in front of this big, beautiful painting that was just yellow, and it, like, chilled me out I've always been a huge fan of art. Like, when I was at Yale, I used to go to the gallery, and there was this one painting that I would sit in front of until I chilled out, and or it would just feed me in different ways than hanging out with people talking about theater does.
Right.
Or reading even does. So paintings, like live paintings, there's something about, and this is going to, again, sound super hippy-dippy, but there's something energetically about, like, seeing something that someone put all of their body into is, I don't know, there's something about that that really does something to me. It does something to me, like, the way that people are in church is the way that I feel in front of certain pieces of art. And that sounds so...
No, huge. I get it. I get it.
That is very helpful.
I was at MoMA yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I love it. That is super helpful. I think that poetry for me is very helpful. I constantly reach for Sandra Cisneros. She's my, like, totem. Poetry, I screen cap nice things that people say to me. I know that's really silly. But I have, like, a little folder of conversations every time I go. Because, you know, you kind of, you habitually have the same patterns of sadness, right? Until you break them. And when I recognize a pattern of sadness, I will go for my little go-tos that aren't, like, Jolly Ranchers and Cheetos and terrible food.
Right.
Ice cream. Oh, my God. But, yeah, I'll have, like, I have these, like, couple of things, these, like, couple of little text messages that people don't even, probably don't even remember sending me that, like, really make my heart blossom.
Right.
And they make me feel like, yeah, no, you're right. I can go another day. This isn't important. I also go back to, when I was at school, I would get really overwhelmed about things because I felt like such a stranger in this world. None of my, like, community was there, and I thrive in community. And I was building a new one, but, like, I also sort of sometimes felt like an outsider because my Miami community was, like, nowhere to be found. Marco Ramirez would say to me constantly, if you're good, you'll know that in 3 months this won't matter. First of all, in 3 months this won't matter. If you're really good at this, in 2 weeks this won't matter. If you're excellent at this, in 3 minutes this won't matter. And I was like, oh, yeah. And so that's always been, like, something that I continue to think about. Right. Is like, this is going to be old news. We're 24-hour news cycle. Even, like, the human,
I know.
You know, this won't be a thing tomorrow. And I'm not making the news. Like, no one knows that I don't know.
Whenever I feel like I've humiliated myself in some way, I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
One, either I don't know the people who just saw me do that, or it's not going to matter.
Yeah,
it's not going to matter.
And I think that's also, like, part of the, you know, that whole reminding myself that it's all very temporary.
Yeah.
It's all very temporary. And Parks and Recreation. That television Amazing. Show will make me happy.
Delightful.
Until I die.
You look a little bit like Rashida Jones, Everyone. By the by.
Yep. I get it all of the time.
All right, last question is there anything you've seen lately that you'd like to recommend? Friends shows or bigger shows, whatever.
I would like to recommend The Get Down.
Okay.
Okay. Shout out to Mamadou and Yaya. and, oh my God, Jimmy Smits, those sideburns.
Ooh, I love Jimmy Smits.
Killing it. Yeah, The Get Down is really great. I want to recommend Insta miniseries because...
Great.
Yeah. I want to recommend...
And people just search that on Instagram and they can find it. Okay.
At Insta miniseries. I want to recommend... Oh my God, I'm reading this amazing short story book called The 10th of December.
Which I've already written down.
Oh my gosh.
Fantastic.
It's fantastic. I'm really late to the party. Decoded on MTV with Francesca Ramsey. It is really, really incredible. And if you have any questions about, like, race or sexism or, I mean, anything, she's probably answered it. So I highly recommend you guys watching. I really want to recommend... There is a live show called How to Help the Self When the Self Needs Help. It doesn't have any live dates coming up, but it's a completely improvised show about self-help, and it is absolutely hilarious.
And it comes back around now and then?
Yes.
It comes back around.
Please just search it. Find Carol A. Jansen on Facebook, because he is the character that is played by Gabriel Levy. If you find Carol A. Jansen on Facebook, Carol will talk to you about your problems. You can email Carol anything. It's totally anonymous, and Carol will let you know when the next show is. And it is a crazy improvised show, the birth of which is very beautiful, but that's for another show.
Let's just leave it there. That sounds amazing. thank you, Ceci. I really appreciate this. It was lovely to talk to you.
To the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.